As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Raptors Reasonablest Podcast. I'm your host, Blake Murphy. Joining me for the first time in a while, Eric Green. What's up, man?
Big week coming up, Blake.
Sure is.
Big week. Why we get paid the moderate bucks?
Yeah, low to moderate bucks. This is it.
This is when we get the eyeballs. It's the real stressometer.
We hope. Anyway, if anyone is listening to this, and is not a subscriber to The Athletic yet, obviously, there has been something keeping you from doing that. Well, wouldn't this be a week to do a trial and see if it's worth the pittance that you have to pay for The Athletic content? In seriousness, obviously these podcasts are free and most of our written stuff is behind the paywall. There has been a little bit of stuff not behind the paywall of late to maybe try to hook you in ahead of the chaotic transaction whirlwind. If you are unaware of what is coming this next little bit, we're recording this on Monday. About the time we hit stop on this record, teams will be allowed to trade. On Wednesday is the NBA draft. On Thursday, most decisions on options, player and team options, are due, as well as
Stanley Johnson, baby!
Yeah, as well as qualifying offers for restricted free agents. Free agency negotiations, quote unquote, can technically start Friday and signings can be made Sunday. You all know how that goes. We're going to know who's going everywhere by Friday. Guarantee dates for contracts are about November 29th. Camp starts expected to start around December 1st. The season will start on December 22nd. That is a lot going on. Trades, draft, free agency, roster shakeups, all compressed into about 2 weeks. Eric, where do we even begin, man?
Also, the Raptors will play somewhere.
Yeah, we don't...
There's no news there. Just to get it out of the way, I'm skeptical it will be in Toronto to begin the season, despite Masai Ujiri campaigning for it and on the CBC a little bit and in the Toronto Star. I just think it's going to be a tough thing to do, both politically and in terms of maximizing public health, while the numbers are as high as they are south and north of the border right now. I don't see it happening. That's not to say it couldn't happen. I think they would take all of the precautions they could, and I just think it's a tough thing to say yes to now if you're the federal government.
Yeah, and that's some reports coming out here in Toronto this morning that, you know, this second wave, obviously bigger than the first numbers wise, but we're getting close to hitting hospital max occupancy and critical care beds and stuff like that. So optically, like, even if I do think the Raptors can make a good case of like, look, we did this bubble effectively. We're a well-run organization. It worked fine enough for the NHL. And here's our plan. And here's why we think this could work. And here's, you know, the money we're putting behind it and what will contribute to the social side. But optically, it would just be really tough, especially since, like, here in Ontario, a huge part of the issue, I think, has been the mixed messaging of like, hey, all these things are open, just please don't go to them. And you know, I think that's
what we're calling it, mixed messaging.
Yeah, I think, you know, allowing the Raptors to do this stuff and making things seem like they're back to normal is tough. Now, at the same time, I do think on top of the, like, you know, medical safety case the Raptors have to make, there's a good, like, these guys just spent a couple months away from their families, have been home for like a month and a half, and will be, if they're not playing in Toronto, will ostensibly be away from or with limited access to their families again for the foreseeable future. And I think that has a real cost. I think there's a mental health risk and potential cost to being away from, you know, your presumed home for a long time. And I think that there is, you know, if you want to make this less... like morals and optics based, there's a competitive disadvantage to not having your usual facility and not having access to your usual player development system and your full staff and your 905 team and all that stuff. But, you know, obviously at this time, public health is going to win out for the feds. If it were up to the provincial government, the Raptors would be playing here. And
we'd be eating at Toronto.
Probably with 19,000 people in the arena. I don't know.
At least 10.
Yeah. So anyway, we don't know as of yet. You know, if you... Following the letter of the law, to me, tomorrow is the drop-dead date, because if they were going to do camp in Toronto beginning December 1st, which is the rumored start to camps, everyone would need to be here by tomorrow to quarantine for 14 days before they start. So... I would expect a decision in some direction fairly soon. It's also possible, especially with the rumors that the league may do the schedule in two halves, that the Raptors get told, hey, play somewhere else for the first bit of the season and we'll reevaluate it as the year goes on. Obviously, that's not ideal for anyone with the uncertainty that that provides. And, you know, if you're a Fred VanVleet or Kyle Lowry or Marcus Hull or whoever, you know, do you bring your kids and your family to that kind of satellite area if it's only going to be 2-3 months? Do you, you know, there's a lot of real life questions that flow from that.
Yeah, these people have lives.
Yeah, and obviously, like, as people are, I know people are quick to be like, well, they get paid millions of dollars for this, and it's, you know, it's true, they do get paid really well, and they're able to help set their families up by doing these things, but that doesn't make it any less difficult for someone to, I mean, I don't have kids, but I'd imagine it's very difficult to be away from your kids as a regular part of your job. And then you extend that out to months at a time. And you talk about the mental health toll and the toll on your kids and your partner and whatever else. Those are real factors to consider and weigh here. But again, optically, it will be weird if the Raptors are playing in Toronto. Eric, do you think we'd be allowed to go if the Raptors are in Toronto? Probably not, right? Like, we're probably still doing Zoom.
I mean, the questions about access in general across the league are still up in the air. So I have no idea. I am guessing whatever happens across the league, Toronto would probably be one of the more restrictive locations because it's based on local government, and in general the states has been more laissez-faire, that's not a great term to use, but I'll use it, than Canada.
Let's say loosey-goosey instead.
Yeah. But it's possible, like, and we just be kept at a distance and away from the players. But for all questions about access, and if we're going to be traveling with the team, and if we, one of us is going to set up in Tampa Bay, if they play in Tampa Bay, we don't know the answers. We don't even know how the league is going to let anybody cover any teams, let alone us covering the team in the most exceptional circumstances. That's not a complaint. That's just the reality of what's going on. And it does add to the stress for us.
Yeah.
So send your checks to Eric Corrine, care of...
As I told my mom is very curious if I'm going to be home for Christmas or not. And as I told her, I don't actually, I'm not super invested one way or the other in what the answer is to all of these questions, because obviously I'm not a public health expert, and I'm not the Raptors organization or the NBA. Like, I found the Zoom process to be fine enough. I am cool covering here. I'd be cool covering Tampa Bay, whatever. I would just like to know either way. And I would like to know things like, You know, are the Raptors playing on Christmas Day? Are they playing on Christmas Day in Toronto? Are they, you know, obviously this isn't just about me, but the level of uncertainty around our work lives, which once the season gets going in compressed format is going to be a big part of our lives in general, is, you know, a little stressful.
Yeah, but I
and
mean,
that's before wondering if one of us is going to get traded this offseason.
Well, I have a 15% trade kicker. That seems like a good segue to get into the matters at hand.
Yes, it does. So a couple quick notes off the top. I mentioned the new schedule for what the offseason looks like. Couple other just quick notes before we get into the Raptors' decisions. I read through that 60-page, I got my hands on that 60-page like CBA addendum argument, document, not argument, over the weekend, and I was able to read through it. So here are some of the key points. Two-way players are now basically 16th and 17th men. They can be active for up to 50 games, which, if you're talking about guys at the end of the roster, like, I don't know that Paul Watson or Shea Brissett would have been active 50 times last year, even with the injuries and stuff. There are other rules in place to keep teams from, like, only having 13 or 14 guys and then using two-ways to fill those spots. But from a development standpoint, a depth standpoint, far fewer restrictions on those guys and more income for those guys. So that's nice. There remains some G League uncertainty. We don't know yet if it's going to be bubbled, if it's going to be like a G League showcase extended in Vegas. We don't know. You know, it certainly doesn't sound like it, even if the Raptors get their wish and can play in Toronto, I can't imagine they're also going to approve Raptors 905 playing in Mississauga and G League teams coming in and out. So some uncertainty there. There is language in that new CBA.
Hold on, Blake. I have an idea. Whole season in Mississauga. Everybody's just staying in Mississauga.
Yeah.
It's like the G League bubble in Mississauga.
Yeah, I mean, they hosted the G League showcase twice, so
yeah,
not the end of the world. I guess the issue would be that depending on the market, if you call up any player, they would have to then quarantine, which is a weird thing to consider anyway, because like there are still things like 10-day contracts and two-way roster spots, so a lot to be figured out there. There is confidence.
I'm just trying to give you a dream scenario.
Yeah, I know. But in seriousness, there is a lot of uncertainty about this. We spoke with Jaume Malalela last week about it. And, you know, there's not clarity, but the Raptors remain confident that whatever the scenario, you know, their player development system is strong enough to make the most of it. There is language in the new CBA document for things like, hey, those Exhibit 10 contracts that... guys, you know, so an Exhibit 10 contract, for anyone who doesn't remember, is when a guy gets signed for a training camp roster, and then if they don't make the team and they get waived, if they spend X amount of time in the G League, they get a $50,000 bonus to supplement that G League salary. Well, there's language in the CBA around, like, them not getting that if the G League season is canceled and stuff. So, tough time if you're one of these fringe guys or someone who might be in the G League. Jamma talked a little bit about how that might shift the way they build those rosters and stuff, but the league has too much invested with this G League Ignite program that Amir Johnson is now a part of, which is very cool to punt on the G League season entirely. A couple more quick notes. The cap is flat from last year, which is what we expected as we ran through our offseason analysis, so nothing changes there. The one interesting wrinkle is that there is a 3% minimum increase in the salary cap year over year. That is small relative to what the cap was projected to increase before, and it is small relative to things like Pascal Siakam having an 8% annual raise in his deal. So, you know, his contract is going to outstrip the cap, so he's 28% this year, and that'll increase next year and so on. But if you're looking at 2021 flexibility, when we ran through Giannis scenarios, we had been assuming a flat cap for another year as well. So a little bit of extra breathing room there. And then with regards to Giannis, he has to make a decision on his Supermax deal by December 21st. That is the same date that OG Anunoby and the Raptors would have to come to an extension by. So while the Raptors won't necessarily have Giannis clarity before the offseason, they will have some Giannis clarity entering the season, whether he's a pending free agent or whether he's locked up in Milwaukee. So,
and that could absolutely affect what they decide to do with OG Anunoby, which we've discussed at length.
Yes, and it could determine what they decide to do if a Victor Oladipo or Bradley Beal or someone like that becomes available on the trade market. So this is the thing with the NBA is I mean, on the one hand, you always want flexibility and you value that, but everything changes so quickly that you never know when Kawhi Leonard hits the market, right? So flexibility is very good to have, but it is not a goal itself. It is just something you like to keep until there is an opportunity to use that flexibility.
Yes.
It's like money. What is, you know, I don't save it.
I like to sit on my money.
Yes.
Like, literally.
Like, wait, you got that Costanza wallet going on? Yeah.
I used to. I think I've thinned it out a reasonable amount, but it's still probably top third in wallet thickness, if we're...
Yeah, in the top tertile.
Exactly. Yeah, so this is going to be crazy. Yeah. It's going to be a crazy month and a bit, and then the actual games are going to start. So boring.
Yes. Yeah. Who cares? Give us the transactions. So I guess, sorry, I know I keep saying one more thing. The other thing is, it doesn't, based on the tentative schedule, the NBA finals would end early enough that Olympics could be on the board for some players who are out earlier in the playoffs. We still don't know if the Olympics are going to take place, what the Olympic qualifiers are going to look like, what players' interest level might be in taking on that kind of risk. If we have a vaccine by then, we don't know all this stuff. But the schedule that was laid out, basically, let's just say the December start date, while complicated for a lot of reasons, if you assume there is going to be international basketball next year, it is better for Canada basketball than the rumored January or February start dates.
Yes. I'm very skeptical about all future plans. Just all future plans.
Yeah.
Any of them. But especially those ones.
Let's talk a little more immediate then. So the trade window will open when we end this podcast. Because you can't trade pending free agents and guys who haven't picked up their options and things like that, you know, there are moves before and at the draft often, so let's not rule that out entirely. But the most immediate thing that we can analyze and take a look at is the draft, which takes place on Wednesday. Eric, I've kind of led our draft coverage, so what I'm going to suggest here is that we switch roles for a little bit and you host the draft section rather than me ask you draft questions that you maybe aren't invested in.
Well, it's not about me, it's about the listeners. And so I think it would serve that purpose. Good call, host. So, forgetting about the Raptors for a while, when you're looking at this draft, after, let's say, the lottery, how does it look to you? Is it like a deep enough draft to get a contributor at 29 where the Raptors will be picking? Is it heavy in one position or another position? Or do you think this will be like many 29th picks in which you're pretty much guessing?
No, I think I shockingly agree with Raptors assistant general manager Dan Tolsman, who called it, I think he called it a very deep draft or a very flat draft or something like one of those terms. So basically, the 2020 draft is weaker than what the 2021 and 2022 drafts project to be. Those are spicy drafts, and there are some, you know, like 5, 6, 7 guys in each of those class that the smart draft Twitter people say could conceivably be number one picks in this draft. So what we're looking at here is a draft that's not elite at the top. Like, you might look back in a couple years and maybe it looks like that Bargnani year where it's like, hey, Rudy Gay had a good career. Bargnani lasted 10 years. Brandon Roy was really good till he got hurt. LaMarcus Aldridge was solid. It probably ends up a little better than that at the top. I think LaMelo Ball has real star potential. Onyeka is like a really cool modern center prototype. And like, I've gotten asked a ton in this process about like, well, would the Raptors move up? And the answer is always, well, maybe. And Onyeka would be a really tasty target for them to go after. I think Tyrese Haliburton and Patrick Williams are lottery guys who are going to like pretty safely have good careers. And then Alexei Pokusevsky, who is a draft and stash candidate, who early in the draft process, it looked like might be in the mix at 29 and now no longer seems like he's going to be around. You know, he has the upside that guy has. You know, obviously there's a long path to get there because he's 18 and very wiry and stuff. But some of the ball handling and passing he does for a seven-footer, you know, you could easily see this guy becoming one of the next, like, all-star caliber players to come over from Europe. So, at the top, it's not bad, but this draft's real strength is in its depth. So, if you're a team like the Raptors that has done well finding undervalued guys in the late first or in the second or on the undrafted market, you're kind of licking your chops, because while maybe there are only one or two future All-Stars in this draft, there are probably, you know, 20 plus rotation guys. And obviously you don't know who those are ahead of time, and you can't be certain they'll slide to 29 or 59, but the Raptors have a pretty good track record of finding them. I would say when you're looking at who could be available at number 29, and this is based on, you know, our NBA analyst, John Hollinger, did a mock draft last week, and Sam Vecenie, our top draft guy, did a full two round mock draft that came out Monday and is free for everyone to read. So check that out. You know, some of the guys they're looking at in those spaces are really interesting. So in Hollinger's mock, it was a decision at the big man spot between Zeke Nagy and Xavier Tillman. In Vecenie's mock, that decision was instead Jalen Smith and Xavier Tillman. I love Tillman, a friend of the podcast, Brian Schroeder, who has a Patreon and is a great draft Twitter follow at Cosmis, COSMIS. He found Xavier Tillman's hand measurements from the combine, and they are like Kawhi sized hands. So
I think the hand measurement we have to go with right now today is DeAndre Hopkins size hands.
Yes. Sorry. So the parallel he drew was Walter from NXT. And we are going with the tagline, no flops, just chops. For anyone who enters the lane against Tillman. Anyway, there are some interesting bigs there. In both of those mocks, a guy like Desmond Bane is off the board. Leandro Bolmaro and Teo Maledon, two other draft and stash options, are off the board. So you're looking at a center or guard there, probably. There are some interesting wings still and wing forwards. Realistically, those are either off the board or second round considerations. We know the Raptors will, reach if they really like a guy. So we can't rule those out entirely. But when I look at my composite board, the guys that are the most interesting at 29 tend to be point guards, and they tend to be big men, which is great because the Raptors have a need at both of those spots, and they're pretty. You can always use more wings, but they're more set at the wing than they are on the poles of the position spectrum. Eric, a guy I know you're really high on, would have been available in Vecenie's theoretical mock and wasn't in Hollinger's, Malachi Flynn. I know he's very much your type of guy.
Yeah. I mean, just the what I've been reading about him, obviously, I don't watch a lot of college basketball. I didn't see him play. He went to San Diego State, right?
Yeah.
So got that Kawhi thing going, but two-way guard, tenacious on defense. I mean, he reads like a, what's it, 6'2", I believe is his?
6'1", 6'2".
Yeah, so he's right in that, you know, Larry Van Vliet type mold with a bit more size. And I just, you know, I'm fond of two-way guards. They're, you know, you still... I think all things being equal, like two-way wings are still your most valuable player types, broadly speaking. But you saw how far and how creative the Raptors have been able to go and to get with that type of backcourt. And to be able to add to that and potentially prepare for when Kyle Lowry starts declining in 7 years, that would be beneficial. But
we worry that if the Raptors end up playing in Tampa Bay, the around the clock winter access to golf expedites Lowry's decline phase?
Yeah, he'll have like shoulder tendonitis, and he'll miss 12 games in the middle of the season. Yeah. But
I do.
Gonna,
I have.
He's
going to
break
authority.
A thumb or something. So,
I have it on good authority that Nashville's pretty well set for golf courses. So that might have been why they were in the mix at all at any point. So
yeah, it's just weather there. It can get a bit colder, and Tampa. you're going to be able to play pretty much any day you want.
Plus, that division realignment would be beneficial to the Raptors to get out of the Atlantic, which projects as, you know, by far the best division in the East this year.
Yeah. Not that divisions matter a lot, but...
Well, hey, they might if they adjust the schedule to be more division-heavy to limit...
That is true. And I mean, that's... I've sort of been... we're going back to the location discussion for a minute, but I've sort of been under the interpretation that they would make it a more geographically friendly schedule, and that's why playing somewhere in the Northeast always made more sense to me. John Hollinger floated Newark at first, and that made a ton of sense to me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so does playing golf every other day, I guess. But that's neither here nor there for right now, because we don't know what the schedule will be, and we don't know what the Raptors' options... well, we sort of know what their options are, but we know what their first option is, and we don't know if that is an option.
Back to the draft now. Just, I want to follow up on Flynn. So the great thing about Flynn is not only was he like a top 10 or 15 player in college basketball last year, he's one of those guys that like... Yeah, there are some, like, you can squint and it's like, well, maybe the upside's not there. Like, he's already 22. He's not that big. Things like that. But there is he doesn't have a weakness, really. Like, there's nothing he doesn't do at least a passable level. And it's really easy, especially with good development systems, it's easy to see those guys. Like, the path is more certain. If you look at a guy like Jaden McDaniels, who's a 6'10 forward who can handle a little bit, he'll probably be off the board by the time the Raptors pick. But among the guys who might slide to 29, I think McDaniels has the highest ultimate upside because he's a 6'10 guy who can handle and he's only 18. But the path to that upside and the percentile, like the percentage chance he reaches that upside, is way smaller than a guy like Flynn, who has a really stable floor and would really only need to, you know, if he became a really good off-ball guy or his defense took a step at the next level, like he does enough things well that you only need to project a little bit of growth for a guy like that to end up really sticking. That's Flynn's really interesting. Some other guards, if you prefer a guard at that spot, which you might, you know, the center position tends to... As thin as the free agent market is for centers this year, if the Raptors don't retain one of Ibaka or Marc Gasol, you know, that position tends to have the highest replacement level around the league. Now that a lot of teams are only keeping two true centers, the G League is usually well-stocked with interesting guys. They have DeJuan Hernandez and possibly Chris Boucher back, and OG Anunoby can play a little time there. So if you prefer to guard, the guys that you are looking at, in addition to Malachi Flynn, Tyrell Terry's probably off the board at that point. And as I mentioned, Teo's probably gone. So you're looking at Malachi Flynn, Nico Mannion, who I'm not a big fan of for the Raptors, Devin Dotson, who is really interesting, like philosophically, because he's very different than what the Raptors have traditionally valued in a guard. He's, you know, if anyone remembers back to training camp last year when the Raptors brought in Isaiah Taylor, part of the thinking there was, hey, we have these two kind of floor general type point guards in Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet, and Isaiah Taylor is like a transition speed demon. Maybe that change of pace, you know, you're going from Marco Estrada to someone who throws heat out of the bullpen to kind of mix up the looks you're giving. And Devin Dotson is the fastest player in this draft and probably has the best first step. So he'd be interesting. Trey Jones from Duke. And then a guy that Raptors Twitter really likes. And I've seen... So when I do these composite boards, I take 12 to 15 different boards from people who I either like their process or I like their track record, or I'm just trying to cast a wide net. Riller is ranked anywhere from 13 to 77 on these big boards. So a lot of disagreement on what he is at the next level. He was probably the best guard in college basketball at getting to the rim and finishing. That's obviously something the Raptors could use a lot of. There might not be anyone in this draft who can put the kind of pressure on the rim that Riller can. And his defense wasn't great at Charleston, but he was also carrying like a 35% usage. So maybe if that comes down, you can... you know, project him to be a little more stable or at least a little better on the team defense side. So those are kind of the options you're looking at 29. And there are more names in this, but these are the thought exercises that you're going through if you're the Raptors. So I'm curious to hear who you guys like. Obviously, I've done, I think at this point, I've done 60 draft profiles. So the running joke is that the Raptors are obviously going to select someone who's not a part of those.
Yeah, 60 my next draft question profiles. Is, who's the Bruno of this draft?
Yeah, so I don't really know.
You don't actually have to answer that.
No, so just for like process-wise, there are 17 players at the top of the draft that we didn't end up doing draft profiles on because nobody had them mocked going late enough where like they'd really have to slide. And then what you're talking about with those guys is like, so those 17 guys, none of them were mocked later than 27 by any of the major mocks. And for the most part, like other than the NBA draft Twitter mock, none of which is like a little more aggressive because it's draft Twitter and you don't have to follow kind of the, well, this is what the bad teams will do. It's just what we would do. None of those guys were mocked to go outside the top 20. So that's kind of where I use the cutoff is like, this means those 17 guys would have to slide 9 or 10 projected spots to be in the mix. So we didn't do them just for time efficiency. We did 60 guys overall, right down to some that, well, four of them pulled out of the draft. So those guys won't be picked. A couple of them were Canadians. We did just to cover off the Canadian angle. And then a few of them are just like guys who have already signed overseas or guys who are, you know, hey, maybe keep an eye on this guy for Raptors 905. Like Christian Vital is a guy I really like for the 905 if the Raptors go the undrafted signing route within Exhibit 10. I will say I think the Bruno in this draft, and luckily we covered him, but the guy I could see getting reached for the most is Jay Scrubb, who's out of John A. Logan. He was the JUCO Player of the Year. He can really fill it up, has good length to project his defense if a team works on him with that. And there have been rumblings from Sam and a few others that there are a couple teams that really, really like him. Interesting to see if he's a guy who gets reached on. So, we covered a lot of guys. The top, if you're wondering who the top ranked guys are who we didn't touch on, and this is based on my composite board. It's not my Raptor, my Raptorized ranking yet. That'll come out Tuesday, by the way. But the top names on the composite board that we didn't touch and could be available are Reggie Perry, Emmanuel Quickley, Ashton Haggins, Nathan Knight, and Trez Tinkle.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Gotta draft Trez Tinkle.
Yeah. Anyway. and then I will say the one name we didn't get to that I just kind of feel like I'll kick myself the most for not including is CJ Ellaby out of Washington State. I really like him, and I didn't find a spot to work him in because he was a guy that I got to late, and like he was just like further down my list when I was going through guys. And then once I dug in, I liked him, but I was like, all the draft profiles were done. So.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Let me ask you one quick question before we move on to free agency.
Yeah.
Because I think you covered off a lot on that one question. You talked a bit about, you know, the different types of prospects and how some are more ready to fit in and some are more, you know, projects. We all know this. The Raptors largely have a history of drafting older prospects, not fully, but as is the case with Bruno, OG, I think, was 20 or 19, I think 20, when they drafted him. But there's been, you know, DeLon Wright was overage. Norman Powell was a four-year senior. Even Pascal Siakam, I think he was 23, right, when they drafted him, despite his lack of college experience. I think he was a redshirt sophomore coming out. So what do you think is more likely at 29? I know both cases are definitely on the table, but do you think it's, is there more depth and more likelihood then of quote unquote ready to contribute guys or prospects and or projects, I should say, at that spot?
Yeah, I mean, part of it is going to depend on, to be honest, like, I don't want to like overhedge here, but like part of it is going to depend on what the Raptors think is going to happen with Fred VanVleet and with Marc Gasol and Serge Ibaka, where if you are fairly certain that Gasol and Ibaka are out and you're not, you know, you're not trying to take a big step back next year, like Xavier Tillman could step in and play now. He's a very heady player. He's very good. I like Xavier Tillman anyway. But in terms of guys who could step in, you know, it's overstated the degree to which we sometimes project a rookie to step in and contribute. But I think if they want guys who could play minutes this year, Tillman and Malachi Flynn are the guys you're looking at. Whereas, you know, if you want to shoot upside, Jalen Smith, you know, if the defense comes along, Jalen Smith is a guy who he's 6'10 and can shoot it. And, you know, offensively, he's there and he's a good, like, kind of below the rim-ish rim protector. But he has some work to do on like his lower half and his explosiveness and his footwork and stuff like that, to where, you know, maybe you want to get that guy down with 905 for a little bit, or working with McKechnie. Zeke Nnaji is a guy who, you know, there's real upside there if the shot comes along, and the reports are that the shot is coming along, but you want to see some game reps for that. And I don't know that he could step in as reliably as Tillman could now. And then, you know, at the guard position, I think Flynn is just straight up better than a lot of the other guys that are around there. You know, I think Riddler could step in and help your second unit offense right away, but the defensive side and whether he can, you know, it's going to be a big role adjustment for him from being a super high usage guy at a small school to being, you know, a more moderate role player at the next level. So I think Flynn and Tillman are the guys that you're looking at if you have a more, short term, because like obviously these guys are all young and you want them around for a while, but those guys could conceivably step in and help out. And then if you're looking longer term, you know, Jalen Smith, Zeke Nnaji, at point guard, maybe a Dotson or a Trey Jones. Although I don't, you know, neither of those guys is like super far away. Like they're both 20 years old and you know, somewhere kind of in that in between phase. Like there's not a guard here who's like a huge project that could be available there. The other name to watch, and I don't, 29 would be a bit of a reach for a guy like this, who like could be a back end first round guy, but I could also see him going undrafted. Cassius Winston from Michigan State is like he literally said in an interview recently that Brian did over at Hoops Rumors, that the guys he emulates his game after are Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet. So you can see, you know, he's 6'1", he's a senior, he's a little older, he doesn't project super well, but he checks off a lot of Raptors boxes. So those are kind of the guys to keep an eye on at 29. And then my philosophy at 59 would be, you know, you're swinging for upside at that point. Like, yeah, Obviously anyone you get at 59 who ends up contributing in any way whatsoever is a huge hit, but I like with the success they've had with the 905 program at 59 is where like I don't really care if a guy can come in and contribute now. I want to, you know, what's that one skill that could turn him into a rotation guy, and what's the likelihood that he gets there? So that's where you're looking at a lot of either you know, combo forwards with really good size like Lamine Jene, you know, point guards who like Yam Adar, who plays in Israel, and Robel, who was on last week, is really high on as a draft and stash guy. You know, his path to being pretty good is, okay, add some size or add a three-point shot because he's got everything else there. And then there, you know, at 59, there could be a lot of guys who are right now look like shooting specialists but might eventually develop into more. So some potential shooting specialists there like Sam Merrill, Justinian Jessup, a couple of Nate Darling, even the Nova Scotia kid, And then, you know, a couple guys who maybe the 3-and-D clicks. I love Nate Hinton. I think Hinton is like would immediately be a fan favorite for anyone who checks out 905 games. There are a couple other guys like that. Trevelyan Queen is like a kind of analytic-y pick who isn't being projected to get drafted a lot. So what I'm trying to say is, I'm sorry I'm just like throwing a bunch of names out there, but like there is going to be a guy at 59 that you can get excited about, or there's going to be a guy that they get undrafted that you can be excited about. Like when Terrence Davis was signed, I think he was number two on my composite board behind actually only Shamori Ponds, who they ended up with also. there's going to be a guy you can get excited about at 59. And 29 is going to be juicier, obviously, and a guy who can maybe step in quicker. But with the Raptors' track record, there will be someone you can squint at 59 and be like, oh, yeah, if this and this break right, you know, that's a guy. So the likelihood of those, we've been spoiled covering the Raptors the last few years that so many of these guys have hit, and it's far more likely that, you know, one of them ends up a DeAndre Daniels, or, you know, we don't know what DeJuan Hernandez is going to be yet, but he barely played as a rookie due to injuries. Like, that's the likelier outcome at 59, or even Bonds.
A Tomislav Zubchev, if you will.
Yeah, or like even Shamori Ponds, who they picked up as a two-way and was cut by January. Like, that's the likelier outcome, but at 59 or undrafted, you know, all you really need to get excited is, you know, a chance. And there are going to be some guys in that range in this draft who have a chance.
Well, now I just hope they get Nate Darling for our friend Holly McKenzie's sake.
Yeah, I mean, Nate Darling would threaten a lot of Brady Heslip's G League three-point shooting records. Probably has some work to do to get to NBA level, and then obviously, you know, roster wise, does it make sense to have two shooting specialists on your roster at once? But that guy can shoot the lights out.
Well, Blake, as much as we love the draft and as much as work as you've put into the draft, I think that free agency and the trade market to a lesser degree is going to have a bigger impact on what the Raptors look like in the next, certainly next season, but going forward in terms of their ability to plan. So we should probably get to that.
Yeah, and we, you know, obviously there's a bit of burying the lead here with this stuff, but it's also stuff that we've spent kind of months talking about. Like, it's stuff that we looked at during the hiatus. It's stuff that we looked at right when the season ended. So I think people know our takes on some of this. So I guess what I'm curious about to start, Eric, before we get into any of the specifics, is when it comes to the Raptors' potential moves in free agency and trades, has your outlook or your opinion on anything changed since the Raptors were eliminated and we kind of took a first pass at this stuff?
I think I've done more thinking on the center spot, and I think just by reading the tea leaves, sort of my Ibaka Gasol, not opinion, but I guess Serge Ibaka becomes a slightly higher priority than I had him before, just because I can see the utility of maintaining his bird rights, not only like into next season, even potentially. So I think that's the only real thing that's changed in a meaningful way. There have been rumors with Serge Ibaka that Brooklyn might be interested in him, and Kevin Durant is calling his name, whispering his name in the winds. I feel fairly confident that the Raptors, should they choose to do so, and I think this is the way it will play out, I don't know, but I think will be the team that offers him the highest one-year salary. That would be my guess. I think that's the most likely scenario. And he loves Toronto, obviously. I read a whole piece about Serge back in March, right before the pandemic, and part of it is how he's become a more open, freer person since coming to Toronto, and a more creative player and a more versatile player. And he credits the Raptors with a lot of that. So I have no reason to believe that he doesn't love being here and playing in this organization. So I think, to me, that's the most likely scenario, is the Raptors sign Serge to sort of an inflated one-year price. And I am maybe more into that idea than I was back in March and even maybe in September.
Yeah, that's fair. You know, obviously the Gasol rumors about him maybe going back to Spain play a factor there. And then that hasn't happened yet as those seasons pick up. So maybe that's a 2021 consideration. Still rumblings that Golden State could have interest in Gasol. I think if you're talking mini mid-level exception, any good team would have interest in Gasol. So the issue, the big swing thing with Ibaka is going to be term, right? Where I think a lot of competitive teams would be willing to give Serge Ibaka the full mid-level over multiple years. I think the Raptors would prefer to give him more money for 1 year and not give him multiple years. So that's where you get into, you know, none of the good teams have cap space. So then, you know, maybe a sign and trade is possible if Ibaka really wants to go elsewhere above the mid-level exception. Now, a deal for a sign and trade has to be at least 3 years long. So maybe you get some hesitance there, but there are options there. Eric, if they were to lose both Ibaka and Gasol, DeJuan Hernandez, maybe Chris Boucher, OG Anunoby, there's some a draft pick. What's your concern
about
both of those guys leave?
It's moderate.
Do you like small ball?
I do. I'd be excited for more OG Anunoby at center for sure. But like you were saying, I don't think it's like, I think Fred VanVleet is a lot, I mean, indispensable is an absolute. He's a lot more integral to what the Raptors do than
he's only lightly dispensable.
It's harder to replace him with either what you have internally or certainly cheaply on the free agent market than it is either of the centers. It's just like you said, the supply is higher in free agency among centers. There can be some pretty established names that end up going for less money than you would think, even in a suppressed market like we're sort of expecting. So it's real. Like I think this year, we say this every year, but I think continuity is going to be extra important this year. So to have one of those guys back, if just for competitive purposes.
So you're saying year four of Malcolm Miller, let's go.
Sure. I don't think Malcolm Miller should say that, but
I think Malcolm Miller ends up in Indiana. I think Bjorkgren familiarity and, you know, a good culture guy, and Indiana could use an extra wing shooter. That's my big prediction.
Yeah, sure. That I don't know if that qualifies as big, but that
shut up, Eric.
that's a great counter.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think for obvious reasons, the Raptors should be trying to get one of those two guys back, but like, I think we're aligned here. If it comes to multiple years, unless they know that Giannis Antetokounmpo isn't hitting free agency, which I don't expect them to know before Friday, I wouldn't go beyond 1 year for either.
And even then, I might not, because like, it's just not how I personally would invest in my roster with bigs who are in the decline phase and commanding, you know, above mid-level exception money for multiple years.
Yeah, it's just not ideal long-term planning. I mean, if you could get Serge Ibaka back on a two-year deal at, you know, just over the mid-level, if Giannis is off the table, like, I'd probably do that. But
now, give me that Serge Ibaka, like, 2 years, $30 million. But the second year is not fully guaranteed or a team option, and that way, what a trade asset that would be at the deadline. love to do things only for their potential cap wrinkles later. That's my CBA brain. Eric, you mentioned Fred VanVleet. Obviously, he's a big swing factor here. We've talked and written at length about why he's so important and why this is a kind of a pivotal decision for the Raptors, short and long term. So I will just ask, where is your confidence level in the Raptors retaining Fred VanVleet Friday or Sunday or sometime before December 22nd?
It'll be funny if he's the guy who takes, like, if you remember last year, we talked about this briefly at the top. Everybody sort of made their decision at or before 6 p.m. on June 30th.
Except for Kawhi.
So if Fred VanVleet just decides he's the Kawhi of this free agent class, which in some ways he is, and just takes all these virtual, hopefully virtual meetings, but I guess you are allowed to travel pretty freely in the United States. So maybe they won't be virtual, and just make everybody wait until next Friday. All the more power to him. That would be very annoying for us to have to deal with for a second straight year. But, you know, we're not important, as we've established several times. We're self-important, but we're not actually important. I still think the most likely scenario is he comes back. I still would put that above 50%. I don't think it's going to be at a number that Raptors fans are comfortable with, though. That's my take. I think it's, if I had to bet, it will be over 20 annually, 20 million annually. And I think there will be some people who go with some justification are uncomfortable with that. And credit Fred VanVleet. He's in a position in which he, I think, will be able to demand that. And, you know, criticize him all you want for going out, and you shouldn't, but you can do what you want for saying he wants to cash in, but, like, he hasn't hidden this. Like, he says, bet on yourself. It's not bet on yourself to be allowed to take less, to take a hometown discount to put myself in a position where I can win more. Like, he's built his game and his name very strategically over the years for this very moment. And, you know, we talked a bit about earlier or during the hiatus if he would be more open to taking a short-term deal, but I think things have conspired as such that he shouldn't feel like he needs to. So I think it's going to be higher than 20 per year. I forget where our mock negotiation had him ending up at. The Raptors won that bid with me as GM. I know it was at a number that you weren't entirely comfortable with from a Raptors
perspective. I think it was 495.
I think it was 494, maybe.
Okay.
Maybe that was a bit high, but I wouldn't be surprised to see it in the 490 range. I really wouldn't.
Yeah. Okay. Quickly, we got to wrap up here, but Eric, whether this is in addition to VanVleet and one of the bigs or as replacements, any buy low candidates. So even if the Raptors do not project to be a below cap team, it's not going to make, not to get in the weeds here, but it's not going to make sense for them to dip below the cap if they have any intention of re-signing any of these guys. So they'll probably operate as an above cap team, which means they'll have the full mid-level exception available to them, unless they overpay to keep their guys more than we're expecting. Are there any targets with that mid-level exception or with a chunk of that mid-level exception that you like, Eric?
We've talked a lot about Harry Giles.
Can never talk too much about Harry Giles.
Oh, I think we're pushing that. So
I mean, look, if
he's a nice player, that's all.
Someone has to take advantage of the Kings being bad. Why not?
The Raptors are a team that would take advantage of the Kings being bad. I don't love Pat Connaughton, but I think he could be had on a nice little chunk of the mid-level. I think he's, if you're looking for that bench wing depth, which I'm always sort of concerned about, especially with the, how should we call it, Terrence Davis uncertainty, that might be a position the Raptors feel they need to shore up. You know, if you want to, I'm out on Dragon Bender as a, you know, redraft candidate. Who else do I like? Oh, there's, of course, John Henson is a veteran minimum candidate who the Raptors should obviously sign. I know everybody else is asking me about Bismack Biyombo. which, sure, fine. You take your Bismack Biyombas. I'll take John Henson and see where we get. Gary Payton, too, as somebody like the second, as somebody totally off the radar, would be a fun piece as a third guard. I know we're really getting it. And, you know, I think bringing back Boucher, we're not going to spend a lot of time talking about him. I don't think it's impossible that a team, like especially a type of team that's going after Christian Wood, who's sort of at the top of that, like older than you think, but still prospect-y big with upside, if he gets a bigger role. If somebody strikes out there, I can see themselves talking themselves into Chris Boucher. And I think bringing back Boucher, it's not crucial for the Raptors, but I think it's their best path to sort of some depth at that position. So I think that's a thing to certainly keep on your radar as a Raptors fan.
Yeah, I'm with you. I have a few other... About
any names you want to run through quickly?
No, it's okay. We're running a little long, and you know, I've already written up all the targets and stuff. The one name that I'll say, because I always say it, is Jamario Jones is my favorite G-leaguer that hasn't got a real crack yet. A undersized point forward who defends like crazy and is a great playmaker and is a, you know, about the same level of shooter as me. So
theoretically great, but totally unwilling.
I have a type. No, there's you covered most of it. And I think, you know, like Chris Dunn's going to be outside of their price range, I think. So Giles is kind of my guy. I don't mind Gary Payton, too.
Bruno?
It's a... Pardon me?
Bruno?
Question the decision-making after he violated quarantine in the bubble, you know? Only now am I questioning Bruno's decision-making. all right, we got to wrap this up, man. So, guys, thank you so much for listening. Again, we have some... obviously, we're going to have a ton of content this week as trades and the draft and free agency come out. Keep an eye out for all that. Lots of mailbag, three-part mailbag running from me this week. So if there are questions that are unanswered from this podcast, check those out. Sam Bassini has a massive... mock draft up and kind of everything you need draft primer. So check those out. I have a couple of draft things that are outside of the paywall. If you're curious what we're all about and want to check some things out, it would be a great week to try one of the trials at The Athletic or just sign up.
Yeah, I have my second Raptors trade tiers up today. I last did it at the trade just before the trade deadline, sort of not necessarily putting value on the Raptors as trade pieces, but sort of splitting them into groups and sort of the scenarios in which they could be valuable. That one was really popular the first time around, so hopefully people find some value this time, although the Raptors aren't in a particularly good situation to make trades because they don't have many mid-level type deals.
Yeah. All right. So keep an eye out for all that. We will probably be back for you for this podcast on Thursday, but that hinges on figuring out timing around Raptors media availability for whoever they draft. And it also depends a little bit on everything not just hitting the fan over the next couple of days. So we're kind of in on-call mode, in wait-and-see mode. So yeah, we'll talk to you again soon and check out all the great stuff that, I shouldn't say great stuff that I'm doing. Check out all the stuff that, all the great stuff Eric's doing and all the stuff that I'm doing over
You're
at the
You're doing great stuff, boy. You're doing great.
Thanks, buddy. All right, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Stay safe out there. Eric, thanks so much, man.
Thanks, Blake. See ya. Do we need to do Google Homes, or are those still on timeout? Okay. Uh.